Hey guys, thanks for tuning in for this 10th episode of Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. Special guests on this episode include host of the sports betting podcast on the Believe Network, also BrandonLang.com. We've got Brandon on the show today. Also, got a brand new book to talk about, Three Wise Men, with Sergeant Bo Wise. And we'll also visit with Andrew Hobson, got a brand new single we'll be visiting about with him as well. Of course, if you would, please take the time to subscribe, drop a like, comment, leave some feedback, and of course, share with your friends. Our first guest, Brandon Lang, will have the chance to talk about maybe some college basketball and NFL playoffs coming up this weekend. First off, Brandon, happy Thursday to you. Hope you're having a good week so far, my friend.
Yeah, you know, we always nice on Tuesday night. They hit Pitt plus 4.5, and they beat Duke. And then last night I found a game I really liked and came with my biggest college play of the year. And college basketball has kind of carried me a little bit the last couple of weeks as I've kind of been stuck in the mud in the NFL playoffs and didn't look good first half. I had St. Bonaventure minus 2.5. They're down 40-25 at the half. So my 2.5-point home favorite is down 15. But being a fact, they start four juniors who've been together since freshmen. They came out in the second half and went on a 16-3 run to get back in it. And then they closed the game in the last 9 minutes on a 16-1 run to win 70-54. So they were down 15 at the half. They win by 16. Just one of those things where there's no rhyme or reason to it, man. Just sometimes these coaches make the right adjustments. Sometimes they don't. Perfect example of that is Monday night. I came with VMI plus 6.5 at home. And they just, against East Tennessee State, and they just couldn't get over the hump. They just kept fighting. Oh, they're on the road plus 7.5 over East Tennessee State. And they just kept hanging in there and hanging in there and getting 7.5. They were down 7 with 2 minutes to go, and they just couldn't hit a shot. And East Tennessee State hit a 3 and lost by 11. So that same VMI team last night was an 11.5-point home underdog to Furman, who's probably the best team in the conference, and wouldn't you know it, they win the game outright. So it just goes to show you, that was a more of a solid pick Monday night with them. They just couldn't get it done for me. Then Tuesday, we hit Pitt plus 4.5. They went outright. Last night, the biggest play of the year was St. Bonaventure. So always, I say this all the time, always nice to start to heat up in college basketball when football's about to end. And after Sunday, it's going to be 2 weeks till the Super Bowl, so it's got to be college basketball all the way through March Madness from here. So the right time to heat up is now.
That's right. Now, are you seeing big differences as a result of quarantines, COVID? How much of an effect? Does that have more of an effect, you think, on the college basketball game than it does on some of the other sports we've been looking at the last few months?
I mean, I think, especially in college basketball, a few more road teams are winning and covering because there's no fans. You know, some of these college home courts are tough places to win because of the crowd and the arena. And some teams just have trouble playing on the road. You maybe have a young freshman point guard. So it helps having no fans because it's more like it's more of an AAU type atmosphere. It just is. It's just guys in the gym going at it, no fans. It's much easier just to play. And play a little more relaxed. I think that's why the road teams are having a little more success.
Well, as we look into the weekend, obviously postseason football, two matchups for the weekend. And Brandon, which of those two matchups really sticks out to you?
I think it's the Green Bay Tampa Bay game, because I just think last week Tampa Bay had no right winning that game, and they figured out a way to do it. Everybody wants to say Drew Brees was just really garbage last week. I've been in arguments with people all week saying, no, he wasn't. He came out to start the third quarter and put together a great drive and put him up 20-13. Then their defense gets a stop and gives Drew the ball back, and he's engineering another great drive, just picks up a third down. They're going to have the ball at the Tampa Bay 37. And for all intents and purposes, he's probably going to go down and score again there with the momentum, and it's going to be 27-13, and it's going to be game over. That's exactly how that was supposed to play out. And once Jared Cook fumbled, once that fumble happened, everything Drew Brees did after that was irrelevant to what he had done before that. He did his job. He came out in the third quarter and got you seven. You gave him the ball back, he's going to get you another seven. And at that point, there's no way against that Saints defense, a Tampa Bay offense, was going to engineer two touchdown drives in the fourth quarter. Not going to happen. They hadn't done it the whole game. They got an interception down to the 3-yard line that set them up for a touchdown. They got an interception down to the 10-yard line that set them a touchdown. And the Cook fumble got returned to the Saints 40 and gave Tom Brady a short field. That was a really, really, really good Saints defense that played their butt off. And they got to go into another offseason knowing that Jared Cook and Jared Cook alone with his carelessness, because every receiver is taught that once you catch a slant route and the DB or whoever's covering you is trailing you from behind, the most important thing is not if you can get 10, 15 more yards once you pick up the first down. It is to secure the football. He was careless, and he cost his team a trip to the NFC Championship game. So for me, Brady covered the 3.5. He figured out a way to cover the 3.5, and I think the Rams defense was tired. I think they had to win that last game of the year against Arizona, and they did. I think they had to win that game up in Seattle in the first playoff game, and they did. I think they went into Green Bay, and they were gassed. Aaron Donald wasn't 100%. I think they were tired. And even as tired as they were, they still manned up and got off the ball back down seven, and they got it to midfield, and he just they couldn't convert. I don't think Green Bay's defense is as good as the offenses they've seen the last few weeks makes them out to believe. I know it's supposed to be snow and weather, but these guys have played it before. So I think the value of the number plus 3.5, I think this game goes down to the wire.
Now, do you think the KC Buffalo game, do you think this one's going to come down as a close game? Or do you think this is going to be KC all the way?
I personally think if Mahomes plays, you buy the Chiefs down to 2.5. And go with the Chiefs. If Mahomes doesn't play and Hen plays, you buy Buffalo to 3.5 and take the Bills. I think it's that simple. The value of the number, getting the Chiefs at home. First meeting this year, Chiefs had just lost at home to KC. They're completely flat. First loss of the year. That's it. And they go into Buffalo and beat Buffalo 26-17. I think the key to the game is the Chiefs offensively are going to do what the Chiefs do offensively. They're going to move the ball and they're going to score. The matchup of the game is, who do you trust? You trust Josh Allen against Steve Spagnuolo's defense, or you trust Steve Spagnuolo to come up with a game plan like he did in the first meeting to slow down Buffalo? Because I don't believe Buffalo's defense can slow down KC. And I think that's the difference. And once they get down two scores, one mistake, and that's it. So I think you lose with the Chiefs before you try to win with Buffalo.
And of course, Brandon, folks can find more information on the picks on the website and also the podcast. What new episode today?
New episode tomorrow. And the website's fantastic. Trace Adams, Gus Augustine have definitely picked up the slack while I went through my little mini slump. And now that I'm on fire in college basketball, it's nice to see those guys dish it to me and let me carry it for a while. So things good. Yeah, BrandonLang.com.
All right, and check out the Sports Betting Podcast on the Believe Podcast Network as well. Brandon, always good to visit with you, my friend, and hope you have a good rest of your week.
Thank you.
Our next guest has a brand new book called Three Wise Men. We've got Marine Sergeant Bo Wise visiting with us today. First off, Bo, thank you so much for taking the time.
Hey, Cameron, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Now, Bo, for you, as this story became others' knowledge, and you were approached about the idea of the book, what was your first inclination, your first thought about putting the whole process down on paper?
You know, it was a very cathartic process. I had a lot to say. The first and foremost, I wanted to honor Jeremy and Ben, and the legacy of the preservation of life, not just taking life. And that was their legacy. And that's what I, you know, so when Tom Saleo, my co-author, approached me about it, I told him my vision and he told me his, and we really didn't have to say much. We just kind of synced right off the bat. We covered, almost 10 deployments, between Jeremy, Ben and myself, not including their, South American deployments or to Thailand or what have you. But so there was a lot, and there were some personal notes from me as far as, coping with grief, dealing with stress in Afghanistan and at home as well. And I had to do both. And Ben I had to do both. So hopefully there's a lot to take away from the reader, for the reader, particularly the veteran reader.
Yeah. Now for you, obviously, so many folks have seen the huge movie Saving Private Ryan, and to have that kind of brought to life as a thought process along with the book. I mean, what's your thought process being compared to that as well?
Oh, I'm not myself. I'm not particularly fond of the. It happens. It's going to happen. I understand it. There's a lot of similarities, but you know. The three of us enlisted very enthusiastic, very deliberately. You know, Ben wanted to serve, you know, and Jeremy wanted to go to Buds, and from a very early age, and they talked about it in high school and college, and at one point in time in med school, that's all Jeremy talked about. And then 9/11 was just kind of the push for him. Ben was already enlisted after 9/11, and after 9/11, he re-enlisted to go to Special Forces selection. So, but because it wasn't, you know, Afghanistan's not a draft war, never has been, and you know, I love the film. It's an amazing film, but I just wanted people to focus on, you know, the deliberate action of, you know, going and Jeremy and Ben just enthusiastically, you know, enlisting.
Now, what was there ever in the process of going through notes, going through memories, was there ever an aha moment that made you maybe really realize that you were on the right path maybe early on?
You know, there was. And I'll tell you, I know things about Jeremy and Ben now that I never would have had we not done this book, and interviewing Green Berets and Navy SEALs and diving into their deployments. That was the rewarding part of it. Obviously, it's going to be emotionally very taxing. And there were moments where I just had to completely step away. And I told my co-author, Tom Saleo, you know, look, man, I'm going to have to step back. If you can, you know, when we were talking to Green Berets and Navy SEALs, and I didn't do a whole lot of the interviews, but, you know, there was a lot that, you know, they would tell me is, you know, how they lived and how they died. And, you know, in the final deployments for each of them, it got pretty heavy and I had to step back. But hearing those little stories like, you know, Jeremy, you know, helping out another, you know, buddy who was hurting in Buds or you know, or Ben in selection on hikes and things like that. That was, you know, the little pieces right for me that just helped me reconnect to my brothers. And, you know, so it was very rewarding. And I think that was probably my confirmation that we're paying homage to two great heroes and honoring their legacy.
And Bo, now that the process is behind you, the writing, the brainstorming, the editing process as well, what have you learned from this process this time around? And has it maybe lit a fire for possibly a second book?
You know, I don't think I would ever do anything this personal or this emotional, not, you know, from my own experiences. I think Tom and I got about as much, everything that we could. We probably could have written 400 or 500 pages. You know, as far as lessons learned, I'll tell you, everybody deals with grief differently. Everybody deals with stress differently. And, you know, I've learned not to compare my situation to anyone else's. And I anybody that wants to talk to me, any of my fellow veterans, brothers or sisters, you know, I tell, And that's happened a few times, and I tell them, don't compare your situation to mine. If, you know, I'm just your brother. I just want to, you know, want you to talk the same way that I've found an outlet to talk to. For me, it's a pen. You know, and you know, the perfect example, Ben and I were walking down the street after we flew home, buried Jeremy, went back to Afghanistan. We finished the deployment, and I flew out to SeaTac near Fort Lewis and his home in Puyallup to hang out with him. We're walking down the street to our favorite little pub in Tacoma. And, you know, for me, when the wheels touch the ground in Kaneohe Bay, Hawaii, the deployment's over. And that's just the way I'm wired, you know. And I look over and I'm talking about Rubens and Bratwurst or whatever, or Grandpa Clem's beer and this and that. And his eyes are up top and he's scanning rooftops. And I had to snap my fingers in front of his face and be like, brother, there's no snipers in Tacoma. We're home. And he's like, yeah, you know, I know. So, I mean, it, you know, and that's two brothers, blood brothers. And that's just the response to stress and grief. And it's just, everyone's different. And, you know, So I think that's a, if there's one like emotional takeaway, you know, not to downplay, you know, whatever it is you're going through as a service member, you know, look left, look right. If you see a problem, talk about it.
That's right. Again, the book, Three Wise Men, A Navy SEAL, A Green Beret, and How Their Marine Brother Became a War Soul Survivor. Sergeant Bo Wise, and Bo, I want to make sure and let our listeners not only know where to find more information about the book, but also everything you've got going social media-wise as well.
Yeah, it's available anywhere books are sold, Barnes & Noble Books, A Million, and Amazon. And thank you guys for supporting the project, for supporting the book, and for reading about my brothers. I really appreciate all your support, guys.
All right. Well, Sergeant Bo Wise, it's been great to visit with you this morning. I hope you have a great weekend, and hopefully we can catch up again later in the year.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Our final guest on the podcast today, country singer and songwriter, and from the time he says hello, you will know he is a country singer. There is no doubt. Andrew Hopson with us today, and first off, Andrew, appreciate you taking some time to be on the show, brother.
Appreciate you having me.
Now, where did country music in your life first begin?
Well, I've been playing music my entire life. And just like a lot of other young kids and stuff, I started out taking piano lessons when I was probably 5 or 6 years old, something like that. That kind of led into me playing guitar, which started out as electric. In fact, because my brother had started taking guitar lessons and he was playing electric. And we listened to a lot of rock and roll back then, a lot more than country. You know, me and him, mom always listened to country and everything. So the country part would be me waking up in the morning, almost every morning, and mom had this little radio CD player in her bathroom, and it would play over and over and over the same Willie Nelson CD. So she had some Waylon and stuff like that. And then I actually, at a young age, took a big interest in like vinyls and stuff like that. So I like old records. And I actually recently, just about 2 days ago, found an old MGM record of Hank Williams Sr. And he's like probably one of my favorite, or definitely my favorite, I would say. But there's just something about like the crackliness of a vinyl that I've always liked. But and just when I was a kid, it was probably more towards me just actually like to watch it spin on the turntable.
But you were wanting to DJ. That's what you were wanting to do. You were wanting to scratch it a little bit.
But I started out actually like right before I got into country. That was mostly to do with me singing and stuff like that, because it's kind of hard to deny the accent or lose this particular accent. But anyways, this actually, now that I have it on hand, I'd show it to you. This was the guitar that I played before I even knew my first chord on an acoustic, how to even fret a chord on an acoustic. So I was actually playing like pretty much any metal from the 60s until now, you know, before country. So a lot of people find that very strange. There was a time I was at a guitar shop pretty local to here, and I was there because I had a show coming up called it was the White Lightning Festival, which takes place in Cumberland Gap. And one of the guys that worked at the music store down there was going to play with me, and he's a phenomenal guitar player. And we were going over some stuff, blah, 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 and getting, you know, some stuff put together. And I said, hey, let me play that thing, that guitar you're playing. He's like, all right. Well, I just, you know, start busting out some Pantera and then, you know, back and forth Metallica and everything. And he was like, he's just looking at me real crazy. He's like, that is the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was like, what? And he said, after hearing you sing and the songs that you sing and stuff like that, to see you just take that guitar and play stuff like that, that's so crazy to me. And I was like, that's what I did before I did this.
Now, so rock was what drew you into music in the first place then?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
How do you find the transition from that into what you're doing now? I mean, obviously you're still telling a story, just maybe a little different pace, right?
Yeah, and honestly, you know, if I had the vocals for rock and roll, I would do both. But I would be the person. No, I would separate the two, obviously. But metal, as far as metal and stuff like that goes, I mean, if the opportunity was, you know, available for me to play a show with somebody and just play guitar, I'm completely fine with that still too. But I would say I'm pretty rusty at it. That was probably the first time my hand has touched that one I just showed you in months. But that right there, that's a 7-string. I played 7-string Ibanez guitars. My guitar teacher, that's what he played. His name was Ben Eller, and he actually pretty good friends with some of the guys from a band called Whitechapel. I don't know if you've ever heard of them, but they're really heavy metal, like real heavy stuff. But he toured the East Coast with them when I was like probably 12 or 13. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever, which obviously I wasn't taking lessons during that time because he was gone. But their lead guitarist, his name is Ben Savage. For Whitechapel, and I think he went back to school or something. So Ben Eller, my teacher, played for him for a little while, and I mean, just a phenomenal guitar player. And I'm not just saying that because he taught me, because I don't, you know, have anything to show for that. I can't back that up with my own skill, but I mean, absolutely incredible guitar player. And then, like, I'd say probably 2 years or something like that after I had actually stopped taking lessons with him, he started doing like stuff on YouTube and stuff. And he's got a huge YouTube channel now. So, and I actually didn't know that until, speaking of, you know, the guy earlier at that music store, after he had said all that, you know, that he thought that was crazy. I was like, I used to take lessons from a guy named Ben Eller in Morristown, Tennessee. He was like, "Wait, you know who Ben Eller is?" And I was like, "Yeah, I used to take lessons from him and stuff." But he couldn't believe that. And I'm sitting here telling him, like, because I've being in Nashville and stuff, you're going to see, you know, big artists and stuff like that. And it's very random. And you never really know when or where it's going to happen. It just kind of happens. And like, I told him like a few little, you know, stories or something like that here and there about stuff like that. And it didn't seem to faze him at all. But when he heard that I'd been around Ben Eller, it like blew his mind. I was like, and I couldn't understand how he would know that or like who this guy is. And he was like, "Dude, have you not seen his YouTube channel?" And I was like, "No, I didn't even know he had one." And I didn't until he told me that, but it's crazy. Now, very small world.
Now, having a new single out right now, Andrew, how crazy is marketing and doing things around releasing music now?
Well, with New to Neon, I think it was actually, I'm not going to lie, I don't remember what the release date was on that song, so, but it's been probably 4 months, I think, maybe something like that, maybe a little longer. It's kind of, I don't know you, I mean, you might know better than I do, but I feel like it's kind of been slower than the single that I put out before that, which it was stronger than that, was one that I co-wrote with Steve O'Brien. New to Neon was written by Phil Billy or Phil O'Donnell and Brian Callahan. But it seems to, things are definitely moving a little bit slower than they were before. And I don't, you know, that could be because of the pandemic and everything, but it's just, it has been a little slower.
Now, how has your songwriting changed during this year? Have you had to learn the technology a little bit, the Zoom writes? How crazy is that? Maybe the first time you did one of those.
The first one I did, it was with Steve O'Brien. Actually, that's pretty much one of the only people I've been writing with recently. And, you know, my songwriting used to be almost non-existent before Steve. I mean, I would peddle around here and there, but I never, that was one big thing coming into country music and, something, being like an independent artist with things, you obviously are going to have to write some songs, you know, here and there. That day is going to come where you have to start, you know, writing enough music to have EPs and stuff like that out when the people want them. And I'm not a powerhouse of a songwriter at all. So having Steve is definitely a big asset to write with, or a huge part of it. Like FaceTime and Zoom and stuff like that, right now, it's the best way you can do it.
Yeah, that's right.
So,
as we've had time to ourselves this year, had more time to kind of look at things, what has been the thing that you've focused on your career professionally?
More recently, as of right now, I've been actually looking to, kind of try to expand what I can do with my voice, as in, you know, like I was saying, if I could sing rock and roll, I would, you know, kind of dabble in that a little bit. But for the most part, it's just been songwriting. That's one thing that I've been trying to work on more than anything, and trying to have enough material that, you know, the next time I am in Nashville, now it's going to be, you know, when I get there, you know, let's get this done, and have some more music out there. That's the main goal.
Now, going forward in 2021, as things open up a little bit, how has goal setting changed because of last year?
Well, hopefully, you know, I guess we would all say this, but hopefully this pandemic just kind of dies down and everybody wants it. Obviously, we all want everything to get back to normal as quick as possible. And I see a lot of things with people that are my age and stuff like that, that are new to being in Nashville. And I mean, I started going down there when I was like 18, and that was in 2017. So it was when I first started going there, and it wasn't like what it is now. So there are a lot of young artists that are going to show up there now, and probably had a lot of goals and things in mind, but it's just not gonna, you know, they are in a different world than I was in when I started going down there. And I know that sounds like I'm some kind of old timer country legend. I mean, it's true. A lot has changed since 2017. So, but any goal that somebody would set, or a man could set about music, or really just anything, I mean, you can't let stuff like this stop you. I mean, there's always a way to do it. There's a way around everything. There's always loopholes, and there's always, you know, you having the will to do it too. So
that's right. Now, if folks want to find more information about the music, upcoming dates as those become available, and all the socials as well, where's the best place, man?
My website is andrewhobson.com. It's got links to everything, but I will, you know, give those to my Facebook is Andrew Hobson. There's two of them. I still have an old personal page, and then there's the official page. You'll be able to tell the difference by seeing the actual album covers on one. It will have any upcoming dates and stuff like that. The website and the main Facebook page has both of those, and links and all the descriptions on all my social medias on where to, I mean, that'll take you directly to another link kind of thing that takes you to whatever streaming platform you use, and it also will show you like YouTube and stuff like that. So, but Instagram is the Andrew Hobson. There's an official Andrew Hobson Twitter page as well, and I think that's about it with my socials.
No TikTok yet.
No TikTok yet.
That's what everybody says is yet. Nobody wants to just say no. They're just like, not yet for sure.
I mean, I have the app, and I do. I mean, I'm not. There's some funny stuff on there, and I do get on there and watch it. I've just not made one because I don't even have an excuse. I've just not made one yet. So.
That's all good. Well, Andrew, it's been great to have the chance to visit with you today. I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule. Hope you have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch up again real soon.
Absolutely. You too, man.
Thanks again for joining us for this 10th episode of Season 2 of Good Questions with Cameron Dole. If you ever have a comment, question, or anything else you'd like to know, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at GQ with Cam. If you'd like to help out in the funding for this podcast, feel free to click the support tab and follow the instructions. If you have a special guest idea, email me, gqwithcam@gmail.com. Thanks again to our good friend Brandon Allen for pinning the music for Good Questions with Cameron Dole. We're going to let him play us out. Hope you guys have a great rest of your Thursday. Join me back here for episode 11, wrapping up the week tomorrow.